Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right. Welcome into another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. Today we are talking about training camp hockey. So games in Australia, games in the United States, bold predictions. Get in the chat, like and subscribe. Hey, and Mark Stone, get bodied. Let's go. You know, he's calling out our players. I gotta call him out.
I like it.
You ain't gonna come in here and mess around with our players here saying they're nobodies because you just lost to the Swamp Rabbits pretty much there, Vegas. So no, I like it. Everybody, thank you guys for coming in the chat. Get in there. Hit that like button just like Stone got hit up into the boards, and that way we can get this podcast rolling. Joe Russell, how are you guys doing this evening?
Doing good. It's good to be able to watch some hockey again. Having a good time so far. How about you, Joe?
Oh, it's fantastic to be able to actually kind of just talk about not real games, right? They're not regular season games, but like actual hockey's going on in terms of stuff. We can see players. We're watching the young guys. We're seeing how they're doing. We're seeing some of the new pieces, the goaltending, you name it. Like it's really starting to settle in now. So it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Rando, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. In case people weren't here last week, I won a little bottle of bourbon here from our co-host Joe. So I'm gonna crack that open and just have a little, just a little one glass, just to smooth over my, my shyness here in the podcast. So
thank
that
you.
Way we can have
you
a proper episode here. But no, I'm doing well. I'm plane bound or Europe bound on Monday. So I will be missing the next three episodes of Hockey Royalty. And if I have that much jet lag, maybe four. We'll see. try to get it all in there. But your boys will be covering the front of the season, an episode, maybe some other stuff going on per week, depending on what they drum up. So please still, tune in, because I know that I'm the wacky one here, but you're going to still get lots of great Kings content with my boys on the mic. But yeah, I'm excited, man. Got to see some Spain, some Portugal, a little bit of Turkey, have some good food, have some good wine.
Nice.
It's going to be fun. Hopefully go to a Real Madrid game, but their ticket system is ridiculously dumb over there, in my opinion, to be honest with you. Like, tickets aren't even sale for the game on October 8th until October 2nd. Like, they only put them on sale a week before. And I don't know if that's because of how fast they sell out, or what's the reasoning behind that, but for a person who's traveling over 5,000 miles to get there or whatever, it's kind of a pain in the butt that I don't really have like a for sure seat. I could buy a VIP pack if I wanted to throw out 500 euros, but I figured I'd risk it and try to see what's going on there. I'm guessing it's because of just the fandom is so rampant that they want to just release it the week before and give everybody the fair chance of tickets, but it's kind of nerve wracking for me.
Yeah, I would imagine, but at the very least, you'll be, I guess worst case scenario, you can watch if you really wanted to. You can probably get the atmosphere down around the stadium watching the game somewhere down there too, which would be probably a blast.
Join it with the locals.
I'm going to have to see if there's a third party after sale website for Spain, because none of the ones that I have over here are working. I was like trying to type them all in. Like, no games for that team. So we'll see. Let's get into it, boys. Before we get into bowl predictions, we are going to be doing a bowl prediction segment later on. So if you have one and you did not submit them to Russ in his tweet, get those ready. But right now we're going to be talking about the preseason games. Let's throw it over to the Land Down Under. We previewed that segment. Two games over there. One game was with the majority of the starters. Second game, we threw in a lot of other guys that got to go on the trip. Overall, what was your impression of the trip? Maybe some good, some bad for that segment there, Joe.
I mean, in general, it was just, again, kind of good to get back on the ice or good to see the guys back on the ice type of thing. I mean, nothing really – I didn't have any, like, grand takeaways necessarily from the games. You know, I'm trying to think back now because it was at this point, it was almost a week ago. But, you know, we saw some decent performances from certain players. I thought like Alex Turcotte looked really good when he was in the lineup. Like Jordan Spence had a nice weekend. You know, so we got to see our first taste for some of these guys. Andreas Englund, we got to see him. You know, the goaltending, we got a little bit of a taste of what we're looking like in goal as all three of them played. So, you know, again, all in all, it was probably just, you know, it was good to see hockey, and it was probably just good for the players to actually, because there's a lot of fanfare, all sorts of stuff going on there. Probably just good to be on the ice and play, right? So that was kind of how I approached it.
Yeah, 100% agree. I mean, no real takeaways as far as analysis of how the games went on. I feel like there's more this trip in terms of like the camaraderie that it can build from having a team go on such a long road trip to go play a couple of games, be around the teammates, especially for a player like Dubois, right? I mean, he's brand new and all of a sudden he's just thrust to go hang out with the rest of his teammates on a trip to Australia. So, I mean, Adrian Kempe scoring 3 goals, can't be upset about that. Trevor Moore looking healthy. So that's good. But and it is what it is. I mean, it was a preseason game, like this is a showcase, and like it was good for the probably Australia too, the fans, and it sounded like that was a real big hit for the people involved.
One takeaway, I mean, that Logan Cooley goal,
yeah,
that was incredible. Like I know it was Arizona that scored the goal, but come on, like that was special. That was,
yeah, I mean, that's the stuff you want to see, right? From this kind of trip, you want to see players just do highlight real goals, whatever.
You want the crowd to have the oohs and ahs, and he gave it to them.
Talk about swag. That kid's wearing 2 gold chains, doing like 360 goals. Man, that kid's got it all right now. And you got to be thinking, as a Coyotes fan, you got to be thinking, man, if this guy's going to be a 10-year person on our team, like that, you can't ask for more than that.
Hey, that team is not, you know, they're not going to win a lot of games this year, but they're not going to be an easy out. I mean, there's talent. They've got a goalie who I think is maybe a tad overrated, but he is capable in Vemelka. You know, the D-Corps got some intriguing pieces back there, some young talent. Like this is people don't realize, you know, if they forget about, you know, all the talk last year in the rookies, but Matheus Michelli was one of the better producing rookies last year for Arizona. That's not going to be a team that's an easy out. They're quietly getting a little bit better. I don't take anything necessarily from this. But I just was like, I figured for the heck of it, I'll do the shot contributions for the games in Australia. Why not? And seeing Mikey Anderson have 10 shot attempts, nobody else on the Kings had more than 7. I was like, well, that was, again, not necessarily taking anything from it, but, you know, you wonder, we've talked about, is there an evolution? Is there another level to Mikey Anderson's game? You know, might we see him try to not push the offense, but put more pucks at net type of thing? So I don't know, maybe just something to keep an eye on if he continues.
I mean, it's probably just the Southern Hemisphere, you know, the toilets spin the other way. It's like it's like an alter world Mikey Anderson where he's just chucking pucks left and right.
Yeah,
Eric Carlson, Mikey Anderson. That would be good. I mean, we kind of saw that a little bit with Matt Roy last year, right? And he's kind of unlocked a newfound offensive step in this game. Just a little sidebar. I thought it was really random. Obviously, the Kings are playing right now in San Diego against the Ducks, and they had Drew Brees there dropping the ceremonial puck drop before the game.
Was that odd?
Former San Diego Charger quarterback. So I'm guessing there's a little bit of a connection there, but I was like, whoa, Drew Brees is at the game. This is kind of strange.
But when you think when you think Drew Brees, at least for me, I don't think San Diego.
No, I don't think San Diego. I mean, you think New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
But for California people do. They think San Diego. And I saw there is a couple snippets out there of San Diego pushing for the next expansion team and putting an arena down there. And so
I did hear that.
Interesting. And so they're trying to, you know, maybe see if they got that.
Do we really need another expansion team in the Pacific Division, though? Do we need a third one?
I mean, California is big enough to hold that, but like, what is bringing hockey to San Diego? I mean, I know they got their minor league team, the AHL team, but I mean, they have enough population there. They lost the Chargers. The Padres are never good. Like, there's room for another big sports team there.
Yeah, true. There's a big fan base there that's clamoring for a little bit more of a kind of sporting atmosphere, especially, I mean, once baseball's over with and
yeah,
nothing else there. Yeah. I mean, you used to have the Clippers. I think the Clippers used to be down there, right? And obviously the Chargers. So, yeah, there's definitely a missing piece there that I guess they could fill.
Let's get into the goalie side here. Do you guys take anything away from the play of Copley? Not a good couple periods there. Is it rust? Is it just, hey, it's Copley? Like, what do you guys think about that?
I mean, I didn't like the first goal, the kind of the bank shot from behind the net there, but I don't think the other ones were. I mean, the Cooley goal, that's a special goal. I don't know that there was a goal that I was like, besides that first one that I was too bothered by. These guys aren't in a rhythm, in game rhythm yet. I'm not thinking twice about it, frankly.
I know a lot of people don't want to we don't want to take too much of it because, you know, it's too early to pull the gun, but that's what our fans are here for. So I'm going to throw out some topics here real quick. So maybe shoot from the hip stuff. Initial reaction to Fiala and PL Dubois.
Yeah, I think there's a start of something good, right? I mean, you saw things that could percolate into something even more. But yeah, this is the first game. The chemistry is kind of getting started, but it kind of seemed like they were making plays happen on ice where you're like, okay, I can see the chemistry start to connect a little bit. We know, or we've just in 1 year of watching Kevin Fiala, it's like there, you can't just step on the ice and all of a sudden know how Kevin Fiala is going to play and or how you're going to kind of gel with that type of player. He's just a unique player that's so dynamic and it's just so unexpected what he's going to do next with the puck. I mean, even his teammates don't really know. And so, I mean, when you pair him and play your first game like that in terms of Dubois, I thought they'd show some good moments playing together. So it's a good start.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the line looked pretty good. I thought for most of that first game, I thought they were the best line on the team. I was actually pretty happy with it. I mean, again, as you mentioned, it'll take a little bit of time for them to get comfortable. But I liked it. I think it's a good start. We'll see, you know, how it evolves and where it goes, and if Kaliev sticks with those two for the rest of the preseason. But I thought so far so good for that line.
I want to take it to that real quick. So we talked to McClellan after the practice when I think it was yesterday. And he had mentioned that they had asked Kaliev to do more over the summer, whether it was stay in LA, work with the team a little bit more, whatever it was, they asked him to do it and he obliged. So that's good to hear. So it seems like that spot with Fiala and Dubois is Kaliev's to lose, which was probably not the biggest surprise, but I don't know. I just feel like for some reason, there's just something missing in terms of Kaliev's game that I just don't know will click with Dubois and Fiala. So I wanted to get your guys' take on that. Do you think that, or do you see Kaliev sticking with those two, or do you see that kind of gelling together as a line?
I don't think I see it sticking. Just because I and maybe I'm looking too much into last year. I just wonder that I just don't know how long his leash is, right? So if things don't click early,
depending on how the results are at the team level, if we might see McClellan look to make a little bit of a change. I mean, I think we've talked about, I just wouldn't be surprised to see Trevor Moore up there or Victor Arvidsson up there at some point if it doesn't click. I mean, listen, I hope it clicks. I mean, that's a perfect guy to have on that line with a guy like Fiala and a player like Dubois, to have somebody with the offensive instincts and the release that he has. It's a great combination if it fits. But I guess until I see it, I'm just going to be a little kind of hesitant to really totally buy into it. I mean, I'm hopeful that it does. But again, he's been given opportunities in the past and just hasn't taken them yet. Maybe this will be different.
It's kind of where I go with it. Is the opportunity has been given to him. It's just he hasn't grasped it. Obviously, he's a young player. But Randy, what do you think?
Yeah, I just didn't really think that he had the legs in the first game to keep up with that kind of thing. You're talking about how PL and it takes a lot to really discern where what Fiala is going to do on the ice. I think that you're looking like Kaliev's more of a reactionary type player, where he's looking and really going there, but he doesn't have that first step to make a reaction. So his reaction is trying to find the soft spot and have people react to him. And I just don't think that really gels with what Fiala is trying to do. Fiala is going to move around and do whatever he needs to do. And he's going to react to you doing something special, whether that be a saucer pass across the ice, a backwards around, the wrap around, whatever. But it just seems like Kaliev tries to find a little soft spot and then waits for the teammates to perform for him in order to get that shot off.
Guys, I want to interrupt you real quick because, oh, man. I don't know who was the secondary play on it, but I think it was a 3-on-2. Somebody was screaming up the wing. I'm watching the replay. Samuel Fugimo screaming up the wing. Passes to Brant Clark in the middle of the ice. Brant Clark, like, looks off the defender to, like, right in front of him and feeds Alex LeFerrier right to the left for an easy tap-in goal. Kings are up 1-0.
Beautiful. Yeah, Clark's ridiculous. He's ridiculous. We'll get to him. We'll get to him. I actually think that could work though, Randon, because of Fiala and the way he holds the puck and he's kind of, you called him an amoeba out there. I think Kaliev does have a really good hockey brain in the offensive zone, to where he is capable of finding those soft areas. He's capable of finding those spots on the ice for Kevin Fiala to find him. So I do think there's an avenue for that to work. I gotta see it more. That's all. So it's hard to say.
I just don't think that he has. I just don't think he has the run and gun and all this kind of stuff to be able to do both. And sure. And so whether that's stationary in the zone and they're playing half court basketball, as they say, or they're doing the run and gun, that line, both PL and Fiala have the wherewithal and the skill set to do both. Where Kaliev is a half court player. And so they're going to have to limit their skill set in order to play with him, where I don't think they should have to.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's funny because I was actually talking with Jesse Cohen about this at the practice, and it's funny. He made the kind of connection where I don't know if you guys have ever played like one of the EA sports, like NHLs, like it's sometimes when you like make a lineup and you put like three players together, like you would put like a power forward, a playmaker and a shooter together. And then like, it would all like light up because you have a perfect match of everything together. And that's kind of what it feels like.
Sure.
This line, right? You have Dubois, the big power forward, you have Fiala, the playmaker, and you have the shooter in Kaliev. It's just, I don't know. I just don't see it. And like, I almost wonder like if Kaliev like gets just back to the fourth line with Lizotte, where he's had the most success in his career, and just turns into that kind of home run hitter on the second power play unit or first power play unit, wherever they want to put him. Because obviously, with a shot that he has, I mean, you want to get him on the ice as best you can in any offensive situation. But man, I mean, and I'm not gonna say just because he scored tonight, but every time I watch Alex LeFerrier play, this guy just impresses me every night, every game I watch him. He scores, obviously tonight, he scored in rookie faceoff. Mm-hmm. He's made an impression with the team to practice with them before the end of the last season. And I just wonder, like, how long, like, the Kings have obviously been this team that's just so patient with their prospects, but there's been anomalies where you see like an Iafallo, you see like a Lizotte just kind of come out of nowhere and just make the team. And I wonder, like, can Laferriere be that next guy where he just middle round pick, kind of not really expected, but he's played so well that he's like earned that opportunity to just, because we're talking about play your best players. And it just seems like Laferriere is the best prospect, at least from the forward position right now for the Kings. And I mean, for me, I would just rather see him on the ice over a player like Grundstrom. That's all I'm saying. If you have to play him in a spot where he's playing with Dubois and Fiala, that might be a little bit too much. But, man, I mean, I just can't see a reason where you don't put that player on the ice sooner rather than later.
I mean, I don't have a whole lot of disagreement there. He's looked really, really good. It just comes back to the roster and who's the odd man out, you know, and then – you know, because I know there was Turcotte's been getting a lot of buzz, and obviously Samuel Fagimo, somebody like who the odd man out seems like it would be Jared Anderson Dolan in terms of who goes on waivers because somebody's getting waived. And I guess it could be Grundstrom. I don't know that I necessarily buy that because, again, I just think Grundstrom's been pretty – he's been a fine player for the Kings. And when you look at his production numbers when he plays, it's not bad.
So it's undeniable. Like, I don't understand what his hate is. I get it. Like, I get Turcotte. I get all these guys.
Yeah.
He's not a sexy player. He's going to hit, which the team needs. The team needs some sort of physical presence. And his shooting percentage is one of the highest in the teams, or goal per 60 or however you want to put it.
So – right. Yeah, where I'm at with this, and this goes back to something we've talked about before, this is the frustration with you're taking the safe route by signing the veteran Trevor Lewis. There's no ceiling there. You are taking the safe route, veteran player, quote-unquote veteran presence, lock up the fourth line, and good locker room guy, good quote-unquote defensive player. Fine. If that's the route you want to go, fine. I just don't think that's your best player. I don't think that's your best option when you have the likes. I mean, frankly, talking about Grundstrom, I'd play Grundstrom over Trevor Lewis. And then when you're talking about leaving a potentially Laferriere, I don't want to go too crazy. And I know you're not, Russ. I don't want to go too crazy with Laferriere yet. But even Turcotte, who if he's healthy, you've made the point, Russ, if he's healthy, play. Let's get him up. And now you have no room for these guys because you had to go out of your way to sign. And listen, maybe Trevor Lewis, you know, is kickstarted by getting out of Calgary and back in Los Angeles, I guess. But again, when you look at what is the ceiling here for Trevor Lewis, because you talk about Russ, maybe it's Kaliev that goes back down to the fourth line. What made that so great is Kaliev is capable of doing what he did with Lizotte. He's capable of still scoring. Lewis isn't. What are we doing here? So that's the frustration is I just think you're severely limiting your upside with that type of roster construction. It's the safe play. And it's easy for me to sit here in this chair and say, I'll play one of the kids or play somebody else. And, you know, Todd McClellan's the one that's got the contract to deal with. So he's going to go the safe route. And I'm not, it's again, he's in the spot that's a lot tougher than mine, but this is the frustration.
I would look at it and say, okay, you brought in Edler the first season and it worked out well. I get it. Okay. You brought in a veteran presence. The team needed it. Last year, Mervara and Bjornfoot were there to play. Now, granted, they haven't. Bjornfoot hadn't shown a lot of that, and then Mervara had really done well in his limited action. Like, they could have taken a gamble on a young kid, and they took the less gamble on an aging veteran or aged out veteran at that point, and it didn't work out well. And then they doubled down this year with Lewis. I think this is I think it's a small mismanagement of the team. How many minutes are these guys playing? Is it really that much of an ask to bring a guy in? You're not bringing in a Vladimir Tarasenko where it's an older guy playing on the second line where you're taking a risk, or Ilya Kovalchuk where the expectations are a lot higher. You're bringing in Trevor Lewis to play 8 to 10 minutes a night, some PK, Like, where is the upside in that? Like you said, Joe, there is none. And we don't even know if he's still good. Like, he's just going to be a sound hockey player.
He hasn't been, Randon, to that point the last couple of years.
So I'm just saying, like, what are they going to lose by playing Jad? What are they going to lose by playing Turcotte or Laferriere 8 minutes, 10 minutes a night, you know, or you know, Fagimo or whatever? Because then when the games aren't going well, you could switch up the lines and have him jump up to the second line to see if you get a spark. But you're not going to be able to do that now because Trevor Lewis isn't a second-line player. I think it was a gross mismanagement of the team a little bit. A gross and mismanagement or a little is not – those are counter arguments. But what I'm saying is that I just think that they – it's like, okay, you don't want to play these guys. You don't want to play these guys, you know, and it's like, I don't know. I saw this video the other day. And Joe, you have kids. And right, this video said, hey, you shouldn't tell your kids to be careful. You should ask them if they feel safe. Like, if the kids feel like they can play and they can get in the game, which Turcotte shows he can, Laferriere shows he can, Fagimo shows he already can in the NHL level in real games, like, they feel safe in this type of hockey environment. Like, let them play. Like, where are we? Why are we coddling these guys continually? Like, isn't Fagimo like 22 years old? Like, at this point, like, he's got nothing to prove in the AHL anymore. Like, he's got to get an opportunity. And that, where 2 years ago when you bring in Edler, a lot of these guys are 18, 19 years old. I get it at that point, but the team is different now. Like, I just don't understand the move at all.
And we've seen
an unnecessary move. It feels unnecessary, right?
That's a good word for it, is unnecessary. And the other part of this is we've seen Blake Lizotte be a pretty good contributor when he's got some offense on his wings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. I mean, they're like tripling down on this defensive, and I just don't get it. I mean, it's and again, I think this goes without saying, we all love Trevor Lewis. It's nothing like personal against the great King Cup champion, get all that. It's just, I agree, Russ, it's just, it is unnecessary. And I don't know, I just feel like it's a missed opportunity potentially. We'll see how things shape out here. And listen, the Kings could be playing and, like, you know, they're trying to have as big of a roster as possible. Injuries happen, yada, yada, all that stuff. I get it. Okay. But you could conceivably say, right, a healthy Turcotte, which has not happened. But then you've got Fagimo, who's got some NHL ability. He's got some NHL games under his belt. He's been capable when he's come up and played. Like, you've got guys that are ready to kind of step in. And it's like, I don't know. I just disagree with it. And it is what it is. So that's why I said last show, I think it was, there is no, what's the battle? There's no battle. Lewis is the fourth line is Lizotte, Lewis, and then one of Grunstrom. And for now, Anderson Dolan, but I guess you could see a Turcotte or a Laferriere. We haven't even mentioned the Akil Thomas, who had a hat trick last game. Like, so I don't know. I just don't think there's a battle, and I think there should be a battle for those two wing spots, and there's a battle for the 13th forward right now.
Trapper Knight comes in here. We don't need Lewis. He brings leadership, but the young guys are beyond needing a babysitter now, and I tend to agree with that. Leadership. Let's flip.
You got Kopitar, Dano, Doubt.
Yeah.
I mean,
PLD should be a leader too. I mean, he's
yeah. Been he's talked about it. Boy. He's going to be the leader for like some of the younger guys, and I'm guessing that means Byfield. But just real quick, it's funny because I just saw Brant Clark like make that assist on the Laferriere goal, and then like a couple minutes later, like Jordan Spence was like, "All right, you want to one up me? I'm going to one up you," and dangled through the neutral zone. So you're kind of seeing that like dynamic of what those two on the ice together brings.
Yeah, that's okay though. We got to get, you know, Andreas Englund's going to hold down that left D three.
Let's
triple down on the D.
Let's slog it through the neutral zone. That's what we want to do. Let's throw it over to the United States. Obviously, in my intro, if you didn't really catch that reference, I was pumped for Stone getting bodied up against the boards. I thought the kids fought. I mean, it was pretty much the Ontario Reign and the Swamp Rabbits versus the Vegas Golden Knights, and we came out with a W. I thought it was a hard fought game. I tweeted after the first, like, it looks like an NHL team versus an AHL team. And they strapped up and came back in the second and third in overtime and got a W. What have been, obviously, we've already brought up a lot of the majors that have made recognition in the rookie tournament and the rookie faceoff. But where did you see from that game? Like, what stands out to you, and where are these younger crops of guys kind of going forward? Like, what are you guys excited about?
I mean, for me, it's just like, it was almost like I wanted to buy tickets to a rain game, like right after that game was over with. That's how excited I was with Ontario. Because I talked to Jared Schaffern at the rink the other day, who travels with he's one of the rain guys. I believe he does color commentary for them.
Jared's great. Yeah.
Yeah. He's awesome. And I asked him, I was like, hey, what was the room like after the win? Like, I can imagine, like, obviously it's preseason, but I can imagine that he's like, oh, guys were pumped. Like, and it's totally understandable. Like, you think about it, like, that was Vegas's first home game mm-hmm. since they won the Stanley Cup. And the rink, the barn was full. You can tell it was packed there. Fans were anticipating seeing all their top guys that were playing. Obviously, Eichel was there, Petrangelo, Stone. I mean, then you have so you have them going up against this team. It was literally the Ontario Reign. That's all it was. Yeah. It was pretty much like that could be the starting lineup for the Reign, the opening night. And after the first two goals, I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. This is going to be like a blowout. It's Vegas is going to show out against the Reign. And then here comes Hayden Hodgson, and I mean, like, it was weird because, like, I wasn't really, like, paying attention to the game. I was probably doing something else, and I looked up, and I just see this scrum going on, and, like, Brant Clark's getting tugged by Stone. I'm like, what the hell just happened?
Welcome to the NHL.
I see the replay, and I'm like, oh, my God. That's one of the bigger hits I've seen in a long time, and, like, totally clean, too. Like, no hit to the head, no blindside, not, like, I mean, maybe borderline charging is what I would have thought. I mean, because he was coming in pretty hard, heavy, but it just screamed like a totally clean hit. Like, that just totally changed the whole dynamic of the game. Like, you can tell it woke up the team. I mean, in terms of the Kings, it woke up the Golden Knights, obviously. But the Kings, I mean, you have to give it to them. Like, quote unquote, like maybe Reign, I guess I can call them. You have to give it to them. I mean, they just really pulled together, and you can tell it's really going to, I guess, prop up a lot of the expectations from what we should deem a pretty good Ontario Reign team this year. So, I mean, I was excited for the game. It was one of the more exciting preseason games I've watched in quite some time. So, yeah, I mean, I hope we see more games like that.
A few things for me. One on the hit and the whole everything that happened after. I got no problem with any of it. I got no problem with the hit. This is a kid trying to make a statement. Kid, I don't think he's a little older than that.
He's 27. It's funny. Yeah, I hear a lot of people call him rookie. He's like, he's 27 years old.
Yeah, but listen, at the end of the day, he's trying to be known. And every player on that ice knows that. Like, knows these younger or these inexperienced guys, younger guys are trying to make a name for themselves, however that may be. Got no problem with the hit. And as you mentioned, it was a clean hit. I also then have a problem with the reaction. Because you know what? If Drew Doughty gets run like that in a preseason game, you bet
best believe,
they're going to lose their mind. And you know what? I love the comment from Mark Stone in the presser. I love that stuff. I think it's great. I got no problem with any of it. I think everybody walks away. Everybody's fine. Nobody's hurt. Everybody's okay. Nobody's feelings are hurt. Let's move on. That was a good old fashioned just hit. And I'm not somebody that I don't like the scrums and fights after clean hits. I do that when it's preseason, it's your captain. It's a little different for me. So I got no problem with that. So I loved the whole event of it. I have no problem with any of it. None of it.
It was kind of like the Hard Knocks with Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if you guys saw that, where the guy pushes him like 5 seconds after the play is over. And he's like, dude, what is that BS? And he goes, what are you talking about? And he goes, I don't even know who you are. Like, how are you on the field? Aaron Rodgers, you know, like, but it's like, I thought Mark Stone was like, dude, I don't even know this kid's name. And he's just kinda, like, wails into me. Like, and the only player worth mentioning was Clark. It's like, I grabbed him and he didn't want to fight me, you know, like, so I thought it was great too.
Yeah. Like, and listen, that's a great chirp, I thought, from Stone. I love that. I got no problem with it. Whatever. I
mean, imagine being Aiden Hodgson. I mean, he's getting more publicity. He's probably got his whole career.
Right.
Whatever. Yeah. Do more. I remember I was at the first preseason game in Anaheim, and I'm thinking like, this is just going to be like a typical preseason game. Guys are going to be playing pickup hockey out there. No real hitting. Dude, the first shift, Aiden Hodgson is number 57 on the ice. just barrels into the corner. Doesn't hit the guy, but you just see his body just almost like face plant against the board. I'm like, dude, who is this guy? And he was just trying to take runs at people all night. Like, more maybe borderline clean hits, dirty hits. Like, what it is, what it is. But I mean, I like that kind of stuff. Like, we, as a Kings fan, we haven't seen a type of player like that since maybe prime Dustin Brown, right?
Yeah.
So we've been waiting for this. Like, we were hoping like Todd McEwen would do that, or Zach McEwen. We were hoping that Brendan Lemieux would do something like that, and it just really never happened. And all of a sudden, you have this guy, Hayden Hodgson, that I feel like Kings fans wanted to buy like 57 jerseys now, like with how exciting this player is. But I don't know. I'm totally with you, Joe. Like, the whole thing, I was totally fine with. Maybe I was like, okay, Stone, like, lay off of Brent Clark a little bit. But
right, sure. Yeah.
Like, the whole, like, you're grabbing him, like, you're screaming in his face, like, okay, chill, dude.
But he obviously at that point, he's seeing red.
So yeah, he's seeing red. He's just like, dude, I need to just.
Yeah,
and Brent Clark's like, I'm just here to shoot and score. Like, I don't know what you want to fight me for. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah,
I want Brent Clark to experience stuff like that because
absolutely,
no, they're not going to cut him any slack. He's going to get players like that. Evander Kane's not going to be cutting any slack. I mean, he's going to be facing these type of players. So
he's used to it. My car.
He's, you know? Especially, I mean, you think about with Clark too, especially for a player, it's almost like that Zegras kind of mentality where you have a player who's going to be doing all this like fancy stuff on the ice. He's going to put a target on his back. So he's going to have to learn to kind of stick up for himself a little bit.
For sure. And while we're on Clark, man, you saw in the first period kind of like the pro and the con of what he can be. As soon as the puck dropped, he's off the blue line right up into the circle at center ice to interrupt the pass. Play comes back around again. He's almost as if he's like a box to box midfielder. He's playing. He doesn't really have a position like a number eight in soccer where he's just
or the star
all
the star
over
the in college football, right? Like where they're like linebacker, corner, safety,
yeah,
hybrid,
like,
yeah.
And it was awesome, like jumping up into the play, forcing turnovers, like at the blue line, making good steps. Like it was awesome. Then. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Joe. Sorry.
I would say then what led to, I think it was the first goal Vegas scored. There was a rush coming into the zone. He obviously jumped right up into the play. And then I think there was a pass that came to him and it like he kind of bobbled it, lost it, and went back the other way. He did kind of get back. And actually, I kind of think there was no forward to come grab the high guy on the goal. And Vegas scores, but that's a little bit of what you see where rather than your prototypical, just boring defenseman staying on the blue line, he's involved in the play. And that's what happens to kind of odd man rush the other way. But for that game, by the way, for that.
He just kind of reminds me of a corner who like baits a quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's not going to play lockdown. He's just baiting somebody. He's shooting for the interception. He's trying to get in the play to break it the other way, and he might miss out where it's a goal going the other way. It looks like we have another goal here. Kromiak getting on the board here. Thanks, Noah. Thanks, Kyle Garcia. Looks like the Kings are back up on the board there.
So, Clark had 19, just over 19 minutes of ice time at 5-on-5 in that Vegas game. He led all Kings players. 25 shot attempts for, 15 against, so over 62% in Corsi, and his expected goals were very good too, if I'm not mistaken, 67%. So like the center he was matched up against the most with is only I think 5 or so minutes, so he was kind of spread out throughout the lineup. But he played against Jack Eichel for a good chunk of the game and was played him even. So again, you mentioned Spence. There's a lot to like. That's not going to be an easy decision for the Kings to make because both Spence and Clark look good really early here in camp, and I don't think that's a surprise.
Just play them both. Can we stop beating around the bush? Why aren't we playing our two best defensive players? Not even prospects. The two best offensive talent that we have. Just play the two best. Prospects.
I thought we were saving the hot takes for later. You're saying two better than Drew Doughty. I like it there, Russ.
I'm watching this game, and I'm seeing Jordan Spence do whatever he wants on the ice.
We should both, and I think it's important to note we'd be remiss to not say, okay, we do got to
be aware it's preseason. Yeah. Pump some brakes here and there. I get that, but none of this.
Pump some brakes, Joe.
That's fine because you know what? None of this is new, and none of this is surprising from either of these two players. This is what we expected. So it's like
can you imagine how frustrated Detroit Lions fans are right now? You draft Jahmyr Gibbs 12th overall, and you don't even use him but five times a game. Like what are we doing here? Like, you have two of the best offensive defensemen or offensive players, period, on your team.
Oh, Fagimo just scored.
On your team, and you're not even using him? Like, I think if either of these guys don't make the roster or are sitting to start the season, it would be a travesty.
And it's going to happen, so get prepared for it. I mean, again,
I was upset last year. I'll be upset again.
I at least want to see a Clark Spence pairing. Please humor me. Humor me. Give me a period.
This top line of Fagimo, Turcotte, and LaFerrière, they're buzzing right now.
I've seen Turcotte in the chat. I'm seeing Fagimo. Fagimo?
Fagimo. It was kind of a redirect. He was throwing it towards the front of the net. Went off the defender, I believe. Turcotte was right there, but it went off the defender and in. So I think Fagimo got that one. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so back to the game, the Vegas game, to wrap up at one last point. Like, listen, Akil Thomas. I mean, he's somebody that we've been pretty high on. I mean, really excited about over the last few years. It's just not unlike Turcotte. He just hasn't been able to stay on the ice. But boy, Randon, we watched him thoroughly with the rain a couple of years ago. I mean, he's a player. So good. Can play the middle, can play the right side. And those goals he scored, that's Akil. He's such a smart player. He's a cerebral player. That's why he's so good in the bumper position. He scored a couple of those goals from that slot area. He knows where to be. He reads the play well. He's a threat. And, like, that's the type of player you have. Like, not a hat trick every game, obviously, but you have a smart player who can find lanes. He can finish. He can shoot. It's like, this is a really, really talented kid and a really good player that if he can stay healthy, he could be as good as any of these guys we're talking about.
I mean, look at all of his goals, the way he scored all of his goals. One was a great shot right by the circle. And then the other two were just kind of scrums in the middle. He got a lucky bounce, maybe about the third one. But this is a player that he's not a one-dimensional player. He does it all, really, right? And plays all positions too. So it's another player, like you mentioned, he's kind of been snake bit a little bit with these injuries, but when he's been on the ice, he's been really productive. So it's almost like, I feel like we're in this like bridge of a season, which is strange to say because we're all expecting, we all have high expectations for the season, but there's like this bridge where you have players like Trevor Lewis, Andreas Englund. I mean, maybe we'll put Blake Lizotte in that mix too because he's got 1 year deal left, Matt Roy. And then you have all these young, talented players like Brant Clark, Jordan Spence, Turcotte, LaFerrière, Akil Thomas that are just on the cusp. And I'm sure we'll see plenty of these type of players with the injuries that happen probably. So I don't know. It's exciting to see these type of players kind of, I guess, build a little bit more momentum as the season goes on. And hopefully they carry that into the rain season too.
They're going to need to because it's – next year, they're going to have to make decisions on Victor Arvidsson. They're going to have to make decisions on a couple guys. Some people are going to have to move up, and they're going to have to show out. I mean, injuries – having everybody play 82 games is not going to happen. So injuries are going to happen. You're going to have to show out when you get there. Fagimo answered the bell last year, and obviously he didn't get a run later on. He didn't get a chance to stay up. But every game he played, he scored a goal, I believe, it seemed like, right? He was always there. He was always in the hunt. And so it's just going to be that type of season where these players are going to have to make a name for themselves. And maybe one will make such a name for themselves that they won't get sent down. But it's just going to be something where we're going to have to look out this year. And it's not always fair. It's not fair to have a player, hey, come up, play five games, get a cup of coffee, and we're expecting 5-6 points out of you. But some of these prospects are going to have to do that. They're going to have to put that kind of stamp on their arrival to force the Kings not to do what they did this year and bring Trevor Lewis in, or force the Kings not to re-sign Victor Arvidsson, because that's a second-line spot available. Right now, there's already one spot available. Right now, Kaliev's penciled in there in soft lead, let alone full pen. So, I mean, there's a spot there, there's a spot there. And, you know, the Kings have been very conservative with how they've gone with the waiver exempt. But I always say if you're a prospect and you can kick open the door and make them have to not, there's no decision and you're on the team, that's the best way to make a roster. Like, force their hand to keeping you up there. I mean, you look at the way Velarde played in his last 10 games when he finally got the opportunity. That was the reason they gave him the second C spot, is how he played. Well, now, did that end up good for him? No, but he got the opportunity coming into camp to have that opportunity. And you're going to look at it. I mean, hey, you get a 5 games in the middle of the season, you do really well, and there's an injury right before playoffs. That's your chance to get pulled up. That's your chance to make a stamp on your name and your legacy and to get some more game checks. And I think a lot of these prospects need to realize that that this is their chance. And the pressure's there, man. I've played some sports in lower levels and your heart's racing, let alone, hey, this is my chance to achieve my dream and make a permanent name on the Kings roster. I can't imagine what that kind of pressure is like.
And just, you know, you mentioned waiver exempt, just for refreshers, you know, Jared Anderson Dolan would have to clear waivers. Sammy Fagimo is going to have to clear waivers. Akil Thomas is going to have to clear waivers, where obviously Turcotte, Laferriere, Pinelli, Kromiak, these guys can be just sent down, no questions asked. And it's like,
totally forgot, you know, about Akil.
Yeah.
Waivers.
Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like if I'm trying to play the game a little bit or try to predict or whatever, and again, I know we overrate, you know, who can, if anybody's going to get picked up or anything like that. And especially when you're talking about a guy like Akil Thomas with the injury history that he's got, would somebody put a claim in on him? It just seems like I hate to say it this way, but like if Akil Thomas continues to perform, to your point, Russ, if Laferriere or Turcotte for that matter, or Fagimo just have camps that you cannot ignore, you know, it's hard to say Anderson Dolan not being the odd man out and him being sent down to Ontario. I would suspect that he clears, but again, it just goes back to it's frustrating because I think the odd man out should probably be Lewis, but it's just not going to be.
Yeah.
What if they cut him? Are they just still owe him money, or how does that work? Like, what was his signing bonus? Is it?
Who's that?
No, he means still Lewis. I think he'd still be on the cap because he's 35 plus. Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong there, but they're not going to. He's staying. He's not signing with this team to go play with the Ontario Reign. He's going to be on the Kings roster. So, like to Joe's point, it's that last spot on the fourth line, and then we're kind of looking at Kaliev's spot, and then whoever wins that, the third pair, really both. I could see both of those sides really being available, but I mean, like if you think about, like, imagine being like Jordan Spence. Like, I just put up back-to-back 40-plus seasons on the Ontario Reign as a defenseman. Yeah. And you're saying I have to compete for a starting job with Brant Clark, who's coming into his real first pro season. I mean, what else more does – I understand we fully expect Brant Clark to be a great player. But
well,
like,
he's hockey incarnate there, Russ, so –
Well, you know. I mean, but like, what else does like Jordan Spence like? Am I going to lose? Like, he's thinking like, I'm going to lose a roster spot because you signed Andreas Englund to a 2-year deal at $1 million per. Like, what's going on here? Like, Matt Roy, just flip him to the left side. He can do it. Or even Jordan Spence, flip him to the left side. Because the thing I was going to say too, and what I was when you were talking about Brant Clark in the Vegas game, there's a couple times there where he got beat pretty cleanly.
Yeah,
but that's going to happen with that type of player, right? Totally going to be expected. So I would like to see him paired with, I wish Matt Roy played left because it would just be so easy. Like, those two feels like a match made in heaven. If you can have a responsible, steady player playing with a Brant Clark, man, that would be work wonders in terms of offensive production. You can let Brant Clark do whatever he wants, and you have Matt Roy kind of helping out a little bit. So, but I mean, the Kings have to figure out a way to get Jordan Spence and Brant Clark on the ice together.
I still think Clark can play the left. I still want to see Clark try the left.
And it's because of the 1-3-1, right?
That's in part of the run through. But the other part of it is let him be him. Let him be that kind of rover-ish position to where, Matt Roy, to your point, if say they moved Roy, or if it's Spence, even if it is Spence, then Spence can play his normal side. Because Spence, I don't think Spence is a really skilled, good skating, offensive minded defenseman, but he's not a rover like the way I view Brant Clark. So I don't know. I agree with a lot of what you said there, and I'm with you on Spence. Like, what more does he have to show? He's proven it at the pro level back to back years. I don't know what is next for him. How could you not have him on this team for what he's done? Again, at the professional level, for all of Clark's, for everything he's, if it is between those two, right? And maybe one is going to get sent down. You can understand it being Clark, just because for all that he's done, and it's wildly impressive, it has been at the junior level, by and large. So, it wouldn't kill him to have, 20, 30, half a season's worth of games at the minimum in Ontario. Again, that's not my preference, but I can understand the logic.
Yeah.
I could you imagine both Fiala and Brant Clark on the ice at the same time? The gambit, that would be.
Real quick, though, actually, I just – a lot of talk about the Dursey turnovers back in Australia. Did we totally miss the Jordan Spence blatant turnovers? I think it was in the first period. So it's like, let's not forget here, Jordan Spence is going to make these same mistakes that Sean Dursey made at times. Get used to it. So for all the hate that was thrown Dursey's way, you're going to see very similar mistakes from Jordan Spence. You have to be comfortable living with what they bring to the table on the other end of the ice. Like you mentioned, Russ, Brant Clark had some moments where he looked a little, got beat a couple times, this and this. 62% possession for Brant Clark. You take the good with the bad. Like that's what you're trying to do, is you're trying to maximize when you're on the ice. And yeah, there's going to be times where Clark may get beat or Spence may get beat or whatever, but there's going to be more times where they're impacting the play offensively, where Englund, maybe he doesn't get beat as much unless Logan Cooley's doing a spinorama on him, but he's got nothing to give really at the rest of the other end of the ice. So it's just, you have to be able to play a little bit more with the puck rather than just always defend.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, we've talked about this a couple times before. This is, the Kings are almost transitioning to a totally different style of hockey, with just based off of the players that are coming in, right? And
potentially,
you've mentioned that they might have to just transition to that different play style, because
is McClellan the coach for that?
They're not going to be winning majority of games 3-2 anymore. They're going to be winning a lot of their games 5-4, 5-3, especially with people like not looking at their goaltending being as good as many anticipate. So But it's fine. This is exciting hockey that we're getting in Los Angeles now that we haven't seen in a long time. And if players can live up to the potential that we expect them to, then they should win a lot of games because of it.
Can T-Mac adapt to that play style? I mean, is he the coach of the future if that?
I mean, I really think he can. Like, I think McClellan's...
He's coached Connor McDavid.
Right, well, and he...
He didn't win with him, but he's kind of used to that talent.
And those Sharks teams were some of the more offensive type of teams back in the day too, right? I mean, again, yeah, they didn't end up winning a cup, but they were one of the better teams in the league for a few years running there. For a while, they were one of the best teams in the league. I feel like he can do it, and we've talked about the style that he coaches with now. And not that I was a student of Todd McClellan under San Jose or Edmonton, so maybe it was similar to what we're seeing in LA, but I feel like he plays the system he's got because it's the type of players he's got. But as you add in Kevin Fiala, Jordan Spence, Brant Clark, potentially some of these other younger guys in the next year or so, maybe that shifts, but we'll see. Cause right now, even with the Rush, you still have the likes of, Anderson and Gavrikov and Roy, who are definitely much more, defensive defensemen, right? So they fit the way the Kings play currently to a T.
What's always shifting is the odds for the football games, and that's what we get to here with our sponsor here at DraftKings. We're back with another week of football, and DraftKings Sportsbook is keeping us in the NFL action with great offers every single game day. New customers can bet just $5. $5, guys. Get out your wallet. Put a Lincoln on the table and get $250 in instant bonus bets. Throw down a $5 on any week's epic matchups and just walk away an instant winner. DraftKings isn't stopping there. All customers can take advantage of two new offers every game day in September. Football is more fun when you're in on the action, so download the app now and sign up with code THPN. New customers can bet just $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. Code THPN. The crown is yours. So we're getting into some bold predictions here on the season. Our esteemed colleague here in Russell, I put out an article, put out a tweet there, and got your guys' input here on the bold predictions. A lot of them were about goals. A lot of them were about where this player would end up in points. So go ahead and read that article at hockeyroyalty.com. I'll just throw out a couple there. Russ was I'll let you talk to yours, but. You have guys here talking about Kempe is going to set a career high, Musgrave Social. You're going to say Jordan Spence will get an ample time on ice and at least get 30 to 40 points. We have LA Kings. Nick Fiala is going to be the first King in exactly 30 seasons to break the 100-point mark. Lion Tamer Alex LaFerriere will start the season on the second line, forcing the Kings to send Fagimo and Jack to the AHL and risk Ravers to creating the rotation of Grundstrom, Kaliev, and Lewis on the fourth line winger slots. So a lot of position base, a lot of slotting in here and there. What was your prediction there, Russ? Since it was your article, let you go first. Where are you seeing the boldness in the season?
So my bold prediction is that the Kings set a franchise record for points in a season. Their record is 105. I forget the year offhand. They've made it to 104 last year, and that they win the Pacific Division because of it. And the reason I kind of say it, like, for me, like, this is almost an expectation. Like, I don't even view this as a bold prediction. And the reason I feel this way is if you look at this team, like think about last year. For like the first like 3 months of the season, this team had the worst goaltending in the NHL. It wasn't even close. And yet they were still kind of winning games. And then once you had Phoenix Copley kind of come in, and then Jonas Korpisalo after that, after the trade deadline, this team was on fire in March. They set, I think, a point streak record and a franchise point streak record. They were lights out. And then you added Gavrikov to kind of round out the top four. And now you have a really solid top four with Anderson, Doughty, Gavrikov, Roy, and not to mention what you add in terms of whether it be Jordan Spence or Brent Clark on the third pair. I mean, you just kind of look at it. Like, if you get all those pieces together for a full season and you just have average goaltending, whether it be Cam Talbot or Phoenix Copley, just go average. It doesn't need to be great. Just don't be what it was at the beginning of the year last year. This team should win a lot of games. And I kind of view the Pacific Division as really top heavy this year. I think there's those three really good teams with the Kings, the Oilers, and the Golden Knights. I think the Kraken are right there too, kind of on the borderline. But then I'm not high on the Ducks. I know you guys maybe a little higher on them. I'm not high on the Ducks. The Canucks just never figure it out. The Flames, I'm still not there with them. And then obviously the Sharks are kind of still in a rebuild. So I think the Pacific Division is there for the taking for the Kings. And if they can just stay healthy and get that average goaltending, should be a lot of points and a lot of wins for this team this year.
I'll disagree a little bit on the Pacific Division. I do think the division's there. They're very capable of winning the division. I think it could be an absolute war. I generally agree with your top three there and any one of those top three teams. But I think the rest of the division, with the exception of San Jose, is competitive. The Ducks, listen, I don't think the Ducks are necessarily good, but I can see the Ducks have like a 20-point improvement on last season. That still only gets them to what? 80. So it's not a great team, but I think it's just a more competitive team. Seattle's going to be a tough out. You see the way they play. They're deep. Yeah. They come in waves. That's just going to be a tough team. I'm with you on the Canucks. I don't know what's going on. I still don't know what's going on there. I'm not in on the Canucks. Then again, if you have a healthy Thatcher Demko, that could get dicey.
Flames are back, baby. So they're coming again. I'm back in on them. So they're going to be a tough. They're going to
how
be...
much money you're going to lose on the Flames this year is what we're asking.
So I do think the division is tougher than I do think the division's pretty tough with the exception of San Jose. Or if tough isn't the word, then competitive is the word. Like there's going to be a lot of competitive games. Like, you know, with most of the teams in this division.
I mean, you kind of look at the Central Division too, just to kind of round out the Western Conference. Central doesn't look as strong as it has been in the past. I think mm-hmm. you have the Stars, you have the Avalanche, and for me, that's kind of it, right? I don't know. I'm not sold on the Jets.
No.
The Blues kind of feel like they're transitioning a little bit. The Wild, I don't know what's going on with the Minnesota Wild. I feel like they become sellers toward the deadline. The Coyotes, we've talked about. The Blackhawks, obviously, are going to be fun to watch because of Bedard, but they're still not there. Then the Predators. No one really knows what the Predators are. So, I mean, the Central Division's kind of unknown, I guess. And even, I mean, I mentioned the Avalanche, but even then, like, you're not going to have a full year without Landeskog. They dealt with a ton of injuries last year. So, the Western Conference feels like it's really top-heavy with those three Pacific Division teams that we talked about with the Kings and the Golden Knights and the Oilers. So, I mean, besides, if they can just stay, like, just stay healthy in terms of the Kings, get the average goaltending, I think they win a lot of games.
Yeah, I it's like the exact opposite of what we said 12 months ago, where the Central exactly. Division was like the dominant. And as the season went along, it was still kind of that way. But then it's like come playoff time, it's like, holy crap, Vegas and Edmonton are good, you know? And then so it really is kind of.
I mean, the Jets were first in the Western Conference, mm-hmm. I think in February.
Yeah. And I think the Jets could. I think the Jets could finish third in that division. I know a lot of people are writing them off, but I
think the Predators too. I think a lot of people are writing off the Predators.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You have Mitch Soros.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm writing off everybody. So.
But I think like if I were to write out my playoff teams, I've got five Pacific Division teams making it in the West.
There you go.
Five Pacific. Okay. I can see that. Yeah.
The two wild cards come from the Pacific.
Kraken and Flames.
Yep. That's where I'm at today. I mean, I haven't actually written that down. If I'm just guessing as we're doing this exercise that you've just rattled off those central teams and like quick in my head, that's where I'm at.
Yep. I agree with that. We feel wavy. I like it.
I know a little ocean in the background. I'm trying out some things live here for the boys. I'll get into my prediction. And I was thinking about this and trying to think outside the box. And I really think that the Kings might have the best center core in the NHL, top to bottom. I think that the centers for the Los Angeles Kings are going to score over 250 points as a group this season. So I did what kind of basic thoughts at like 75 for Kopitar, 63, kind of what the averages have been for all the players, and then bumped it. So I'm thinking over 250, which would be, you know, 85 or so, 75 for Pierre-Luc Dubois, about 60 for Deneau, and that 40 mark for Lazat. I think the center group can be tremendous for this team. And that's kind of where my bold prediction is. The team is going to be carried by the spine of this organization, and going to be able to put up some real numbers there.
Yeah, I mean, I like that. I think in that 250 might just get them tied with McDavid and Draisaitl at the top of Edmonton just for those.
Well, that's right. Yeah,
but
they play on the same line all the time. So
that's true. But yeah, he moves in the depth.
Hayden Hodgson just scored.
Of course, he did.
The MVP of the preseason.
Hold the 92 comes in and said, who's Edmonton's third center? Because that's they don't need anybody else. Noah coming in there. You got Hodgson coming in there.
Ryan McLeod, I think, is not somebody to totally just brush aside. He's fine. And let's not forget, like, Ryan Nugent Hopkins is still there. Like, if you're going if depending on how they shake out.
Yeah, right? But Hopkins isn't playing 3C. He's playing on the wing.
But, I mean, they at times, depends how they shake it up. Sometimes you can go down the middle with McDavid, Draisaitl, Hopkins, and McLeod, and that's awesome. So I don't know, but your to your point though, Randon, I don't know if maybe we're being biased, but I'm with you. Like top to bottom, this is as good of center core as there is in the league. Although it's funny, if you watch the Vegas broadcast, they talked about the center depth in the division. Among those top three teams. And is it Lawless? Is that his name? I'm sorry if I'm the color.
Think, yeah.
Gary Lawless, I think it is. And he said Vegas was hands down the best. And you know, it's a Vegas broadcast. And like you start off with Eichel and Stevenson and Carlson. Like that's good. I'm not gonna sneeze at that's for sure. So I think all that to say, like, yeah, the Kings are
275. Were you trying to push my buttons here?
No. What? I think you're good. I think it's a good thought though, because I think that's it's gonna have to be.
I think it's because there's a lot of unknown with Dubois is why they're kind of riding. I don't want to say riding off, but they're downplaying the core, the center core of the Kings a little bit. But I mean, I agree with you, Randon. Like this could easily be the best center core in the league if Dubois can live up to expectations and take that next step in terms of playing in a destination he wants to be in. And you get a full season of him playing with Kevin Fiala. If those two can kind of mesh together. Obviously, we saw what Kopitar, Byfield, and Kempe did together in their short time frame. So now you have a full season with them. Let's say Deneau, Moore, and Arvidsson stay healthy. I mean, we all know what the Knights line could do together. So, I mean, if you get continuity with those three lines, easily could be the best center depth, not even in the division, but in the conference or the NHL.
It's in the conversation.
But a lot of it, I think, is predicated on what Dubois can do in his first year with the Kings.
Do you think that they're defensively the best center group in the Pacific, Joe, since we're talking about that?
What I would say is they're probably the hardest center group to play against. And that could be because for a multitude of reasons, offensively and defensively, and just with the exception of Lazat, their size, they're strong, they're hard to play against. And I think that's what makes them so good is I mean, Kopitar is so good at both ends of the ice. Guy's going to be a Hall of Famer, so that's a little bit different. But Deneau, it just he's got a motor. He's such a smart player the way he reads plays. And then Dubois is just this physical, imposing centerman who I do think is good enough at least defensively. And you see what he can do offensively in the offensive zone. So, yeah, and Lazat is just a pest. Who doesn't stop, and he's a very, very good fourth line center, arguably one of the best fourth line centers in the game. So I just think they're difficult to play against.
They're a matchup nightmare.
Yeah.
That's what they are. I mean, McClellan just has his pick. I mean, he doesn't have to deploy Dubois against the other team's top talent. He can save them for the offensive zone draws and put out Dubois and Fiala.
For sure.
And all of a sudden, if you get a D-zone draw and you have whether it be Philip Deneau or Andre Kopitar. I mean, man, that's why I'm with you, Randon. Like easily could be the best center. Of course, because each of them do something, kind of bring a different element, I mean, to the game. Feels like. And so, yeah.
Let's get into the fans here. Kings Rule comes in saying, I think Talbot's going to have a monster year, 915 to 920 save percentage. That would make Joe grow hair and then lose it again. If that happened, what are you guys thinking on the goalie situation? Everybody's down on us. In media, obviously we've already said it. We don't expect a lot from this group. Is Talbot the most likely player to have a year that carries this team, or are we going to see spurts from everybody? Is there a player that you would stick your hat on to have that kind of season?
I'm taking the under on those numbers, by the way. If there's a sports book that will let me. I think the optimistic view here is if there's a goalie that can be that, you know, right now it'll probably be a share of probably pretty close to 50-50. If there's somebody that can take the Lions' share of that, I do think it is Talbot. I think he's a better goalie. There's a lot of question marks. Age, health, recent performance hasn't really been that good. So where is he in his career? Does he have that kind of one more year left in him to kind of perform
we'll see. I'm going to say it's Talbot, but you know, there's reasons for concern there.
I mean, I just imagine like imagine being one of these goaltenders and everybody's writing you off. Everybody's saying, like, I'm sure they hear it, like, oh, the Kings are going to be good, but who knows about their goaltending? Like, I feel like that was – like, if you're Phoenix Copley or Cam Talbot, you just have to hear that and say, okay, my expectations aren't that high. I'm just going to go out there and play my game. And we heard from Talbot when his introductory press conference, when he talks about how the Kings system kind of makes it easier for the goaltenders a little bit. And we saw it a little bit with Copley, where he wasn't really asked to do much. And when he just came in, he looked so good because he was making saves that probably should have been made. And so, yeah, I'm not as worried about the goaltending as everyone else is. They're like, we're expecting, like, nobody's expecting them to be Andre Vasilevsky or like win like 40 games and have like a 920 save percentage. Nobody expects that. We just want them to be average. And the Kings have a better team in front of them to do that. So
speaking of the big cats getting back surgery.
Yes.
So yeah. I was going to ask you guys, so this brings up kind of an interesting thing. And we didn't really mention, like, David Rittich is involved too. If David Rittich goes on waivers and I'm the Lightning, like, that's a player I'm probably looking at. Like, I feel like that could probably scare Rob Blake a little bit. I mean, what would your guys thought on that?
I don't know the goalie situations across the league.
I mean, the goalie situation in Tampa right now is not great. Not great.
Right. I think, yeah. Like, I think that's a possibility because he's cheap. And I think you know, it's not like, you know, Vasilevsky, he'll be back. What is it? 8 to 10 weeks, they said, something like that. So, you know, they need somebody that's cheap. To be a stopgap. And so, yeah, I mean, Rittich could fit that bill. But again, I don't know the rest of the.
The only other player with a number on their media guide is Hugo Ahlenfeld. Like, he's the only person with a number. Like, the other two guys on the list are not even there. So, like,
Brian Elliott was their backup last year. Is he?
So they have Jonas Johansson and Matt Tompkins, which are both.
Oh, Jonas. Yeah, that's
so, I mean, 94, 95 birthdays. Those look like minor league players to me. So.
Jonas Johansson's not a good goalie.
So, I mean, that was my immediate thought when I saw the Vasilevsky news, was they could be a team that could put in a claim for Rittich, and that could probably hurt the Kings a little bit, because then their goaltending depth probably takes a hit, because I feel like Rittich is like that safety valve almost. Mm-hmm. If Copley or Talbot doesn't work, you have a goaltender who's been to an All-Star game before, who's experienced in Rittich, that can kind of help out and be that, I guess, Phoenix Copley again. So I don't know. I mean, that would scare me a little bit. Derek Portillo or Berube is like our third goalie.
There's talk, you know, that maybe they make a trade or whatever, but I don't see Tampa doing something like that, because it's not a season-long injury. I don't think they have to do that. I just think they need somebody to kind of put the Band-Aid on it. So I think that's a good call about Rush. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
there's something to watch for.
They're setting up the injury now. They're going to put him on long-term IR until the playoffs, and then that's we'll bring him out. That's the
what?
The
no, Tampa Bay doesn't do that. Come on.
You know what's kind of crazy is that he talked about it a little bit, and he said last year he wasn't feeling like himself, and he feels like he's been overused in the net, and where previous years he's been able to kind of just grit it out and do that, and last year his body failed him in more ways than one, and talking about how some games he loses like 6 to 8 pounds, and then you play back-to-backs, and you ride in me, you know, 60-something games a year, and you know, like, and I know a lot of fans are gonna be like, well, you know, back in the old days, you'd have one goalie play 82 games. And it's like, well, this is a different sport. You know, the amount of offense and the amount of shots that you're seeing and all that kind of stuff like that, I think it's just way different. And it's going to be interesting. And we talked about it a little bit, how we think that the teams are going to more go towards the 50-50 split. I think that looking at a player like Big Cat here, Vasilevsky, I mean, I think he's the best goalie in the league. And having been ridden in that way to where the team just threw him into the ground. Now, granted, he's got to love that the fact they got cups. Like most fan bases would love that they got a lot of cups. So, I mean, I'm sure he's not regretting how much he played, but now he's like, man, I'm having back surgery and I'm about to come back. And he's definitely going to be relied upon to carry this, this elder statesman team to another cup. So what does that look like? I mean, 8 to 10 weeks to probably be healthy enough to play, but you're probably looking at another month to where he feels confident in net. Like you're really looking at maybe January before you're seeing a real, real player there. That's a huge ask for him. And that's what makes Russ's statement more impactful. Are they going to go and get a goalie via trade that they trust? Are they going to patch it together and hopefully sneak in? But we've talked about that's a very competitive division. Are they going to be behind too much to make a second half push? Or are they going to be able to outscore teams like the Kings did with mediocre goaltending to be able to stay afloat? It's going to be interesting out east.
So yeah. Speaking of goaltenders that have been talked about in the market, John Gibson actually just left the game. He's being helped off by the training staff. I don't know if he got hit with a puck without the mask on, or he had his mask on. So, but I'm not sure what happened there, but that didn't look good. Looked like he was a little dazed.
John Gibson's that good of a goalie these days. So I don't know if that's.
I think he just wanted
four goals on 15 shots.
And that was, I thought that before today. So Randon, I guess.
Let's get into your bold prediction there.
Yeah. So my bold prediction was admittedly pretty bold, but Russ specifically said bold, so I went bold.
Yeah.
Trevor Moore scores 30 goals. I think I'm all this to say I'm very bullish on Trevor Moore this season. This is a guy that I think when healthy, because he missed some time last year, he's instrumental in the offense. He is one of the top shot attempts on the team each of the last couple of years. Last year, he was among the tops in shot contributions and shot attempts last year per 60. And I think that I fully expect 20 goals. And I know he's never even done that before. Like I'm expecting him to score 20 goals this year. And I think what's going to not allow him to score 30 is he just doesn't get the power play time to really do that. And the biggest question is he is all over the ice in terms of his play driving, and he's all over in terms of, again, like I said, his shot contributions and shot attempts. And he's somebody that if you look at some of the tracking in the all three zones, like he gets high quality scoring chances in part because the line he plays on is just buzzing. But what he doesn't really, what he has yet to show is he doesn't quite have that elite shot or that elite release. So I think the two things going against him here are that he doesn't have an elite shot, at least that we've seen yet. And two, is lack of power play time. But I guess, you know, again, I could have split the difference and gone 25, but I think this is a player that we see a career year from Trevor Moore is really what I'm going after here. And I think he's a player, and maybe with a little bit more puck luck. I think he had an 8% shooting percentage last year. You know, if he gets that to double digits, which it's been, I think every year prior, at least the prior two or three years, it had been in the double digits. He even spiked 15 one year with a spike in a shooting percentage one season. This could be somebody that pushes 30 goals.
Man, I asked for bold and Joe certainly delivered. No, but I love it. Like you think about it, I'm glad you brought up the shooting percentage because that it did feel like you watched some of Trevor Moore's game and he was getting snake bit a little bit. And you just mentioned he was at 8%. I mean, Adrian Kempe was 16%.
Right.
And he was shooting a lot more than probably Trevor Moore was. I'd have to look at their individual shot attempts. But, yeah, man, I totally agree. And you just kind of hear it a little bit, too, from talking with McClellan and hearing from some of the team guys that Trevor Moore looks like he's fully healthy. And we never really saw him back to 100% toward the end of last year after he came back from concussion. He was even still wearing that tinted visor, but man, I mean, if you get a fully healthy Trevor Moore, I mean, look, he scored 5 shorthanded goals just 2 years ago, and maybe give him some of that power play opportunity. I mean, you look at the second unit. I don't know. Maybe he could find a spot there. Who knows? Yeah. But Yeah, I totally agree. If they, I just talked about that nice line, if they can have a full season of chemistry together, I mean, obviously we know the chemistry is still there, but I would love to see Trevor Moore have that Adrian Kempe type breakout season.
Breakout season for Trevor Moore. It's happening.
Johnny Venpatna, that boy can score. He lacks power play time, but he has shown two seasons ago he can shorthanded score with the best of them. Maybe that's where he gets his luck there. You know, I thought he's been the most overpaid guy on the team last year. I was very harsh on him. I think deservingly so. I think he got paid for one season of play. Sometimes it's that helps. Like obviously, Kempe got paid after one season. He backed it up. I really didn't see Trevor Moore doing that last year. And obviously the concussion, you know, that kind of stuff can linger, and where you feel confident, you're skating with a new visor, all that kind of stuff. And I mean, if he's not feeling confident, he's not feeling like himself, then he shouldn't be on the ice. So I don't know if that's a Moore thing or if that's a staff thing, but I'm not going to get into the science of concussions there. I mean, obviously I would love for him to score 30 goals. I just don't think he's that type of player. I think you could see 20 plus, and I would be perfectly happy with that, but hey, it's not bold for no reason there, Joe. I like the huevos you put on the table there.
That's what I'm talking about. What is his career high in points?
50-something.
It had to be 2 years ago, right?
He hasn't hit 50 yet, has he?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
His career high in goals is 17, I believe. And he probably had like 30-something assists that year, I want to say. I don't know if you can.
I was going to say, like, and I think I said this.
48.
40. Okay. I thought it was 50. At some point last season, like Trevor Moore, it may not be consistently for a variety of reasons, but there's going to be a season where he spikes like a 60-point season. And maybe that's this year. I think it's in the cards for him. Maybe it's not 30-30 to your point, Russ. Maybe it's more like a 20-40, 20-35 to get that 55, whatever. But I think there's a player that can settle into 50 plus points. A little bit more consistently.
It's also a player that has been asked to do a lot since he's come over to the Kings. I mean, he's just been moved up and down the lineup almost his whole time with the Kings. And I remember McClellan even talked about that 2 years ago when they said maybe they've been a little too kind of rough on him in terms of changing his spot in the lineup every now and then. So, I mean, yeah, give him some consistency. Give him some power play time. Let's see. They gave him that money because they expected him a lot out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not just going to hand out that type of contract to any type of player. I mean, we haven't seen, we've seen them be restrictive in terms of those contracts. So,
I mean, Velarde scored similar amount of points and he got almost a mil and a half less than what Trevor Moore got. Like they overpaid him.
With Velarde, though, is like that we were just talking about shooting percentage. He had like the highest shooting percentage this team has ever seen since like 2007. So, that's what I'm saying. The team they're looking at deeper numbers than what we see just in terms of the absolute like goal total or assist numbers. There's more to that. And Joe brings up the shot contributions. You track those numbers and you see Trevor Moore at the top of those statistics all the time.
Yep.
So
third on the team in shot contributions per 60 last year. Third on the team. Fiala, Arvidsson, Trevor Moore.
There you go. And you have
I will not stand for logic, okay?
you have Arvidsson and Moore on the same lineup. And then the Noah had maybe a little bit of a down year last year in terms of offensively. And now that you have a Pierre-Luc Dubois to help him out, I mean, that's why I'm saying that, like, that's why this Pierre-Luc Dubois move is just so underrated in terms – not only what he's going to bring individually, but it just rounds out the lineup so much. If you think about it, like Rasmus Kupari was this team's third line center for most of the season last year and was not, probably shouldn't be a center at all in the NHL. I think he should be a winger.
You're right.
And now that you have a legit number 1/number 2 center in Dubois, where you can move Deneau down and the rest of that line down to get better matchups against their opponent, that should open up whole new lanes of opportunity for all players on the Kings in the forward lineup.
I just think that McClellan was too afraid to go away from the nice line because of 1 year of success. And last year, it didn't really work for me in the same way it did the year before. Like they never really had consistent, contribution from that line multiple games in a row. It didn't seem like they gelled. It just seemed like they were good enough to contribute here and there. Like, it really didn't seem to gel as much as the year prior. And I think that it was like, here, let's pay Trevor Moore for what he does. But like, wasn't Iafallo like chased out of LA because he was not great at anything and he was okay at a lot of things and he got paid $4+ million. And then 2 years down the road, the Kings are in cap trouble and they got rid of him to sign PLD. So is this going to be a Trevor Moore thing where a couple of years down the line, like this player is making, you know, mid fours and he's not really a first line player. He's not a high end second line player. He's a middle six guy that can't really contribute in any real way other than he's good at a lot of things. And is he going to create too much blockage and cap flow in order for the Kings to be able to move forward with this team? As in, we talked about already, so many players already on that are not waiver exempt or that could be exhibited to waivers who are second round picks who are supposed to be futures of this team. There's going to be guys that go forward, i.e. Byfield, that are going to need money. You look at LaFerriere, if he keeps contributing, is going to need money. Like, where does the buck stop? And we're going to pay for one guy for a 48-point season. And he's never done that before. Like, it's just an outlier. And we're going to pay this guy for not only the money, but the term for I would say just like an all around type player. For me, it didn't make any sense. I thought it was a vast overpay. I like the player. I just think that the Kings really just threw too much money at a situation because of one season on a line where I believe he got carried, in my opinion.
I just go back to, like, I think that line was asked to do a lot more last year. That's a line that was McClellan's crutch in terms of, like, hey, if I need a line to shut down an opponent, they weren't looked at to score last year, even the year before that with Deneau. That, like, Deneau hasn't ever been looked at to score with this team. He's been looked at as a shutdown centerman. And that's kind of what he's always been viewed as a King, but or as a, even in his NHL career. But now, that's what I'm saying. Like, you get Dubois, you give him an opportunity now where he can match up lines and give him better chances to score. So that's why I can see Trevor Moore.
So he's not a player on his own. He needs somebody else to make him a better player.
No,
he's not carrying. He's not carrying. You're saying the only reason he's going to be effective more offensively is because PLD is in there and he's going to get thrust down into the third line to where he'll get better matchups. But if you're a true offensive talent worthy of that money, you shouldn't matter who you're playing against. You should be carrying the line and facilitating on your own. I just don't think Trevor Moore does that.
I can make an argument that $4 million you're not paying $4 million to top offensive talent. I know that's not a little amount of money or small chunk of change. Hefty contract, but you're not. I mean, I don't know. I don't view
third line.
I'm not saying that it's not an overpayment. I remember when the contract came in, I thought it was higher than what I would have expected or I would have wanted. But it's just the expectations, I guess, are a little bit higher now for Trevor Moore. Is what you're saying probably ran into, right? It's just you want to see more out of this type of player. And like that's where I kind of go back to, like, we never really saw a healthy Trevor Moore toward the end of last year, where, like, when he was buzzing, he was one of the better forwards on the ice. That's why, like, the whole Thousand Oaks kind of thing started, is because he was doing a lot of things during games. So that's why I'm looking forward to anticipating a good season for Trevor Moore this year. And I think that expectations, I think he'll live up to him. I don't know if I'm with Joe on his 30 goals, but that's where the bold predictions come into play. But yeah, I think he can have a breakout season this year.
I don't think you're off base here though, Randon. Like, I totally see where you're going with the Iafallo conversation. And really, I think the difference, at the time, like, Iafallo was a first line left wing. And he played excellent defense as a winger. So you could say that there was, you know, reason, I guess, to give him, and at least it was reported that Kopitar enjoyed playing with Iafallo. So, but I do think there's a better player in Trevor Moore. I think he's got more upside. I still think that's there. And, you know, listen, that doesn't mean it's going to happen just because I think it's going to happen. It very well might not, and it could look bad. I don't think it's a crazy, that's in the realm of possibility. Absolutely, Randon. I tend to buy, is I guess where I'm at, is I think I do think the best is still yet to come for Trevor Moore.
You're buying stock on Trevor Moore.
I am.
Yeah. And hey, we've always said we're a podcast by the fans for the fans, and where we bring up real concerns. And this team is already in cap hell. And it's going to continue being that way when they're trying to find ways to pay different players. And I just don't want to get stuck with a contract where it doesn't age well, especially since it's not like they just paid the guy for 2 years at $4 million. I wouldn't care about that, but you're talking about a 5-year contract that starts this year until he's 32 years of age, average 4.2. Yeah, yada yada. The cap's supposed to go up, all this kind of jazz, but still, that's not chump change. You know, you're not getting him for a steal. So I think it's just something to take a look at.
It's fair.
We'll get to one more Kings or fandom question or prediction here. And that's Trapper coming in. Bold prediction already is potting 30. He saw your Trevor Moore 30 and he called you there, Joe. He wants to see what hands are being dealt. Already coming there. I know this is a fan favorite, and I'll just take this. I think he's a fan favorite. I think everybody sees his shot as an elite shot, and I still think it's an elite shot. Mm-hmm. Will he ever get the top 6 minutes, 5-on-5, to be a 30-goal scorer? And I just don't think that's ever going to be the case. I just don't think he has that playmaking ability or the skating where the game is going to consistently be up in the top six. I would love to be proven wrong, but I do think he can score 15 to 20 goals on the power play. So they need to force him on the power play too. And I mean, he had 13, I think, last year, I think 10 of which were on the power play. So it's not far off to have him be a power play merchant and play third and fourth line minutes.
He's definitely got the shot for it. That's why I like, if you have to place Arthur Kaliev on the fourth line because you get a player like Laferriere or whoever that just forces their way onto the second line or third line or whatever. I mean, but you still have Arthur Kaliev for the power play opportunities, and that's where he thrives. So, I mean, Arthur Kaliev is here to score goals. He's not here to shut down his opponent or anything like that. He's here to score. And give him that Ovechkin treatment where he's just constantly on the ice just for power plays, right? I mean, don't take him off the ice during power plays. Leave him on there. So, I'm with you. I think this is a big year for Kaliev. So, we talked about Byfield. We've talked about other players that are kind of have lofty expectations. But, I mean, with Arthur Kaliev, this is a player that's been given opportunities and is still kind of not really grasped it, really as much as some other players have so far. So if they're going to give him the chance to play with a player like Dubois and Fiala, you're arguably your best offensive player and your new toy, I guess, that you're paying $8.5 million. If you were giving him those two as line mates, then he's going to be expected to produce. And if he doesn't, I wonder how long that leash is going to be with Cali before McClellan makes a move.
I think there's zero leash.
I think so too.
I think the guy last season who had the most riding on the season was Vilardi, and we call that out. I think this year the player with the most riding on his play this season is probably Kaliev. With all the players we mentioned that are on his heels, wanting roster spots, who are playing well in the season, he has to perform. It's not off the realm of possibility to where he gets lost in translation for this roster.
It's so funny that we're talking about this with Kaliev, and rightly so. I think this is a good conversation, but the first round pick in Alex Turcotte that was taken fifth overall hasn't even played. We're not even really. Hopefully he can play and stay healthy. Let's see what we get out of him. But yeah, no, I totally agree. I think Kaliev, it's going to be a big year for him. Hopefully he can live up to those expectations.
It's almost as if Turcotte has become just not an afterthought, but you got to see
a wild card.
Yeah. 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 He's gone from top five pick to a wild card to a dart throw.
Two years ago, I was like, he's going to be a bust pick if he doesn't play 850 games because that's the average amount of games that a top five pick plays. And I just want him to play 8 games. Just get on the ice, you know.
And I haven't seen tonight's game, obviously. But, man, just watching the game in Australia, when he's on the ice, he's buzzing out there. He's buzzing.
The World Championship shows why he was picked fifth overall. Yeah. He hasn't been on the ice.
Yeah. Dude, I go back and watch the highlights of that USA-Finland game almost every month. That game is one of my favorite World Juniors games of all time. I mean, you have Arthur Kaliev, Alex Turcotte. I mean, you think about that USA team that they had in terms of with Kaliev, Turcotte, Zegras, Boldy, Faber was on that team. I mean, there's just talent loaded on that roster.
And Cam York.
Cam York. And they went up against Finland, who had a legit team themselves, and Lundell and Simon Tyvall, and I think Hinanola, I believe, was on that team. Man, that was a great game. So, but yeah, Turcotte's looking really good tonight. I'm watching the game right now, and he's looking pretty good. And you'll love this, Joe. Brant Clark I think it's Drew Helison kind of got into Eric Portillo's grill a little bit, and Clark just kind of got him in a headlock and just rang him back.
There we go.
That's kind of stuff, aggression you want to see from Brant Clark, right? So
yeah, the train's got a little guard on the front. I like it. You know, we got to clear the cattle out of the street.
Portillo's looking pretty. He's pretty good. The Ducks scored. It's 4-2, but he's made some pretty good saves. So that's good to see.
What about Jacob Ingham? Well, before we get out of here, Jacob Ingham, he's looked like he's done great this preseason. You got to feel confident about the goalie depth a little bit more in the organization after the preseason hockey.
I mean, we talked about Jacob Ingham a little bit last episode, I believe, after the rookie faceoff, but he's just turned into a player that I want to root for because of everything he's going for with his back surgery, missing all last year. You can just kind of hear the emotion in his voice when he talks about the game after the rookie faceoff. And he's played pretty good in his couple of preseason appearances so far. I think he had the one game in Anaheim, and they lost in overtime or whatever it was. But yeah, I thought he had a pretty good game. So maybe you can kind of build on that a little bit. I don't expect him to be on the Rain roster, but who knows? Maybe he gets picked up by another team, or he kind of sticks around the Kings pipeline a little bit and builds the momentum a little bit.
Yeah, they can use as many bodies between the pipes right now in the pipeline as they can get, if that's what I say. So,
yeah,
especially
hopefully he sticks around and can play. Yeah.
Well, I like the waves in the background. It kind of calms me down when I'm watching you guys there, so we might have to keep that up. But thank you guys for being in the chat. You guys make the show possible here, so appreciate you guys coming in the chat. As always, you can find all these articles, including Russell Morgan's big predictions, bold predictions article that came out today on hockeyroyalty.com. Go ahead and get your merch. Find us at hockey_royalty, at JW Paterino, at NHL Russell, and at Rando Commando 24. You guys will be with the dynamic Doosome the next couple weeks. I will be across the pond in Europe having some fun. You might get some 2 a.m. Randon if I feel lucky. But otherwise, the boys will be holding it down to start the season. So get in here, support them. Like and subscribe. Tell your friends. Tell your uncles. Our goal is to get over 1,000 subscribers this season. We're right over 667. So punch that subscribe button. Please help us out. We appreciate you guys. Terry, first time I've seen your comment. Terry Westy, thank you. You're welcome. Thank you for coming in the chat. I like it. And Noah's, I vote for in favor of 2 a.m. Randon. You might get your wish. You might get your wish.
Enjoy that trip, though, man. Enjoy that.
Yeah, enjoy yourself. Have a good time, buddy.
Appreciate it. And as always, on this podcast, go Kings, go.